Welcome to Crafting Solutions to Conflict, a podcast exploring how to deal effectively with conflict, actual and potential, good and bad. Engaging guests discuss a range of insights, and I cover tips and topics based on my 35-year fascination with conflict and my experience helping people with it. I'm your host, Jane Bettel, and my goal is to share a perspective on conflict that is both practical and positive. My guest today is Paula Oleska, who uses her brain upgrade system to help clients with internal conflict and external conflict. Hello, Paula. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Hi, Jane. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I would ask you to start us off by telling us a bit about how you got to where you are today professionally.
So it's a long and winding story, and I'll make it short. So I've been now in private practice in New York City for about 30 years. But I didn't start that way, and I wasn't planning on doing that at all. I have a master's degree in English from University of Warsaw in Poland, which is where I'm from. And I came to New York to study modern dance, and then I switched to singing opera. So I was planning to do that professionally. But while I was doing that, I started to come across with these fascinating techniques that had to do with first the body and then body-mind integration. And they were so instantly helpful that when I was around people who would say, like, I have a headache or I have injured myself or can you help me with this? I would say, yeah, I can help you and you will feel better in 15 minutes or maybe in half an hour. And they did. So I started to acquire clients. Right. But I still didn't understand that I was starting a private practice. So that went on for several years. In the meantime, I was singing. I was a what is called a beginning professional. I was singing with small opera companies around New York City. And then at some point, I needed to make a decision. Am I going to go full bore into professional singing? Mm-hmm. And look for other opportunities, or am I going to do something different? And I was by then already had a number of clients. So I gave it a lot of thought, and I realized that it was much more fulfilling for me to have more in-depth contact with individuals and being able to affect their lives rather than singing, which was very rewarding, but it was contact for a moment. And even if I moved people, people told me that they were moved to tears by my singing, but I never saw them again. Or if I saw them at all, because I was on stage, they were in the audience.
Sure.
So then I made a decision that I was going to put singing on the back burner as a hobby and continue to develop my professional practice. And at that time, I realized that I had no idea what that meant. So I had to learn all the entrepreneurship skills from scratch.
Yes.
And then here I am 30 years later.
I guess it worked out.
Practice.
How marvelous to have this tough question of which of these satisfying things would I like to do? Would I like to continue with song or would I like to move over to this? It sounds like an almost accidental course that you were on.
Yes, it was. I thought that if I write a book about my life, I will call it Accidental Businesswoman, because I not only I didn't plan on it, I had absolutely zero background in business. I never knew anybody who ran a business. So I had a really long climb to learn a lot of things.
I guess so. Well, that's very impressive. That's fantastic. And so interesting as you describe the difference between I'm having a positive impact, but I can't really feel it as much because it's brief and it's a little bit removed.
Yes, exactly. And that feeling became much stronger at the time when I was making those decisions, that I really not only feel more satisfied personally, but I feel like my role in life and in the world is to have more in-depth impact on people's lives, both individually and in groups. And so that eventually, you know, became the deciding factor. And I continue to find that incredibly satisfying. I love my work. I love working with clients. I love my clients, and they love me. That's perfect. Why they continue to work with me. And this work is just produces such incredible results that I always keeps me captivated. And I just always look forward to working more with the same clients or with new clients who I can introduce to this magical method.
Well, I want to hear more about the method soon, but I would ask you, if you cast your mind back, where do you think these initial, you said you came across things and then you were able to share these things with other people about this body-mind connection, I'll call it. Where did those first inklings come from? How did you stumble on them?
While I was pursuing dance, I had a knee injury. At that time, I was completely not aware of my body, other than what I learned to do while I was studying dance. But I was taking a number of different movement modalities and the general category of conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I was encouraged to rehabilitate my knee injury through movement. So that led me to exploring different movement modalities. Oh, by the way, by the time I came to New York, I was also very well versed in yoga. Mm-hmm. It was like way before anybody became aware of yoga, for a number of different reasons that I don't need to go into. Not only that was my passion at that time also, but I became an yoga instructor. Mm-hmm. So I was teaching yoga for a while, specializing in this rather unusual discipline of Iyengar yoga. Iyengar was, I think he's not no longer alive. He was a very outstanding master who emphasized properly aligned body in all the different postures, and that really appealed to me. At that time, I think there was only one other yoga teacher, Iyengar teacher in New York. So I worked with her, and I then trained to become an instructor, and I taught yoga. That center where I was training to be an instructor always had guests, lecturers of a number of different modalities. So I learned everything there was. I'm just very curious. I'm always motivated by curiosity.
Great.
I learned everything that was going on at that time in the field of holistic healing. So herbology, acupuncture, iridology, you name it, everything, meditation and, you know, everything else. But one modality really caught my attention that had to do with balancing muscles through reflex points. Hmm. It's still not a well-known system at all, but it's incredibly effective. So that was like magic. It was like, you know, you just push certain things, touch certain things, and all of a sudden you feel stronger, more coordinated, and free from pain. So it was so fascinating. I decided to pursue it. And then other things developed from that. And also my practice developed from that, because then I had this magical tool. If someone around me said, like, I have this pain, whether it was headache or backache or ankle injury, I'm thinking of a friend of mine, and or any other thing, I would jump in and say, like, hey, do you want me to help you? Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. So I was fascinated first with this tool that was so incredibly effective in reducing or eliminating pain. And then other things grew out of that. So the modality that I then became enamored of called Brain Gym grew out of that. And that became my passion for a number of subsequent years.
So having taken you backward, I'll now bring you back to today and ask you to tell us more about the work you're doing now. Obviously, we know a little bit about the foundation, but tell us more about what you do and how you decided this is the way you want to address what you do address.
I'm a born teacher. I was whatever I learn, I end up teaching. So I just have this natural tendency. I very quickly, when I learned this first modality, I very quickly became an instructor. And I was teaching classes. So that was the fundamental piece of what I do now. And then other pieces were added to that later on. And they all have to do with this pretty much overlooked aspect of what makes us function, which is the mind-body connection. Mm-hmm. So at that time, it was almost completely unknown. It's becoming a little bit more popular now, but it's still that when you look at any kind of self-help or any kind of professional help, it is dominated by the mind. Mm-hmm. So you have to tell yourself different things. You have to think different things. You have to use your thinking to control your emotions or behavior. You have to change your thinking to change your emotional state. It's all mind-based. So I did that for a while because it was fascinating in the beginning, because it's presented like the ultimate solution to everything. And then I realized that it was solving only a small number of problems. And then when I compared that with how fast I was getting results with the modalities that were including the body, the choice became obvious that that was a faster way to go, a much more rewarding way to go. And as I delved more deeply into that field and started to develop my own approaches and my own techniques, that became even more rewarding. I'm especially proud of developing a new way of working with emotions that really solves problems on a much deeper level. And it doesn't involve talking yourself out of your emotional states, which I find very, very difficult. And everybody I work with, when I ask them whether they were able to do that, they usually say sometimes, but most of the time, no.
I just have to pause there and say how amazing that they even say sometimes.
Right. Because it works for a moment, but it doesn't really solve the problem. So the emotion will come back.
Right. I think this is so interesting. I know when we talked a little bit ahead of time, this idea that you told me about regarding, well, that's what people have been trying to do, but it's not as effective as it could be, really stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So another, you know, source of that is that I'm a very emotional person and I always had a challenge dealing with my emotions, overreacting or just being emotional. It took me a long time to understand that it's actually an asset, but it also allowed me to do my own research. So the funny aspect of that is that I remember talking to a presenter who mentioned something about emotional intelligence. And yeah. I told him, I'm very interested in that. What can I find out more about it? That was many, many years ago before that term became popular.
Right.
And he said, oh, you should talk to such and such professor in this university. He's an expert on emotions. And at first I thought it's a good idea. And then something bothered me about that. And I kept thinking about that. And I finally realized that this professor does research in the university in a lab. I'm an emotional person, so I'm an expert on emotions because I know what they feel like and how to work with them.
You live with them, yes.
So there it is. I'm an expert on emotions. Therefore, I can teach people what to do with them.
I want to go back to what you said a moment ago, and maybe it's related to what you just said, which is the idea of emotions being an asset.
Right. The problem is, the conventional approach to emotions is that some emotions are considered to be an asset, which is love and joy, and fear and anger are considered to be really bad emotions, and you're not supposed to have them. Well, you can't really have one without the other. So being emotional in general, it's an asset because it's a foundation of empathy. So people who teach emotional intelligence always want to emphasize empathy, being able to understand other people's emotions. It's really impossible unless you understand and work with your own emotions, including fear and anger. So essentially, if you are not emotional, then you don't have empathy, and then you can't have good relationships. So emotions in general are an asset. That's one of the reasons. Another reason is that emotions are our evolutionary equipment to deal with unpredictable situations or predictable situations.
Okay.
As well. So it's an incredibly versatile tool. And if you learn to work with that tool, you'll have a lot more choices about what to do if you don't learn how to deal with this tool, because you are not in touch or not allowing some of the emotions to be present, then you don't have that many choices. And your range of emotional expression and self-acceptance is very limited.
So this is interesting, and it's bringing up a question in my mind, which is, if someone tries to just say, okay, I'm just going to get rid of the negative emotions, I'm either going to bury them, pretend they aren't there, how successful is that going to be?
Well, I think you may know from your own experience with different people that it's not very successful. There is a quote that I found out recently, actually, it's from Freud, that emotions which are buried will never die. They will surface somewhere else. Mm. I thought it was actually a more recent quote, but it goes all the way back to Freud. And that's so true. First of all, because emotions are the life energy. So you can't bury them without depleting yourself. And I'll come back to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But the second thing, which is even more important, my fundamental discovery, which allowed me to develop my system, is that after delving into the situation when I was trying to understand what was making me upset and why I was upset, and I was spending a lot of time just being upset and exploring what that was about, the bottom line is, which I need to preface it with saying that I thought everybody knew that. And that okay. was like over 20 years ago. And
okay.
people still don't know that.
Oh boy.
That the so-called negative emotions are there only to tell you that your needs are not being met. Mm-hmm. So if you repress them, then you'll never get your needs met because you don't know what they are. On the other hand, if you learn to accept them and understand them and work with them, so you get to the bottom of it and understand what the need was and you fulfill that need, then you will never have that emotion again in that situation. It's a much simpler solution to emotions rather than repressing them, which takes tremendous amount of energy.
So interesting. So it's both that you're using up a lot of your energy trying to force this emotion deeper into yourself and that you're not dealing with the root of it anyway. So yes. It sounds like this is just a kind of a lose-lose proposition to take that approach.
From my perspective, it is. And it's very disappointing and sometimes even distressing for me to see how much of that approach is still out there.
Still,
and people are constantly told not to get angry, not to get scared,
right.
and somehow just get rid of those emotions. And first of all, you can't get rid of them. And second of all, as we just discussed, you are missing crucial information that will allow you to fulfill your needs and therefore live or survive in a much more, much healthier way.
So from my perspective of thinking about conflict, the idea of trying to suppress them, which is not going to work terribly well, is a perfect way to feed the conflict, the negative type of conflict, because to me, the positive type is the creative, collaborative type, but the type where I damage the relationship, I damage myself, don't get anything accomplished in a positive way, seems to absolutely thrive when I am taking the approach of, well, if I'm angry or if I'm fearful, I'll just try to pretend I don't feel it.
Yes, absolutely correct. And I think you've seen that in people that you work with, that if someone is angry and they are trying to pretend they are not, it's just going to sneak out sideways. So either they will make a snide remark, or they will explode later, or they will have some other irrational reaction. And in the worst case scenario, they'll get sick.
That is a bad case. Tell us more about the work that you do, which moves away from that kind of approach.
One of the components of what I do is whenever we do these very gentle physical activities that organize the brain, I always identify the emotional issue that's going on so that while we are doing this exercise, the body can resolve its inner conflict or trauma related to this particular issue. Sometimes it's not really trauma, it's just like a conditioning. So one of my favorite examples is when a woman, the emotional issue that came up was, I always have to take care of others, which I think you have encountered that a lot, especially in women, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I asked her, you know, what will happen if you don't take care of others? And she said, they will get angry. Then we did an exercise for about 10 minutes. And I said, how do you feel about that now? What will happen if you don't take care of others? And she said, without stopping, they will take care of themselves.
Fabulous.
So we didn't have to discuss it, manipulate it, analyze it, figure it out where that came from. I mean, we discussed that prior to that, where that came from. So we already knew that, but it really was the transformation in the moment that happened, that she no longer felt compelled to automatically focus on other people. And she had that transformation that allowed her to the freedom to see that situation in a different light and allowing people to take care of themselves.
So valuable that in so many ways for everyone involved. Let us all as adults try to take care of ourselves as much as we can. That's an excellent example.
Other examples are really also stunning. Most people who work with me are women. For some reason, men are just not so inclined to do self-development or helping self-work, which I would encourage men to do because it's just as important for men as it is for women.
Oh, sure.
So most women who work with me are very highly accomplished professionals, and yet they mostly feel insecure, which causes conflicts either with their friends, colleagues, and peers, or other conflicts at work. So if someone has a conditioning from way back in the past that they are stupid because they were told by third grade teacher that they are stupid and they will never get anywhere, that conditioning is stuck in the body. And right. even though people are told just to let go of it, there is really no good mental way of letting go of it.
Right.
But you can let go of it through these mind-body emotional techniques that I use. There was one woman who is a medical doctor with 3 degrees who is one of my clients. She had to pass the boards, and she also had a conflict at work because she was insecure. So when we worked on that, it turned out that she had many layers of conditioning that she's stupid. Yeah. So even though she had all these degrees and she was so accomplished,
right.
that really didn't allow her to function up to her full potential. And so if she was criticized by, let's say, a supervisor, you know, she would respond defensively because she felt insecure. So once we cleared that and she no longer felt that way, her relationships at work improved and there was much less conflict because she was now able to handle criticism in a calm way and decide whether it was valid or not and take it from there.
Well, that's a wonderful example, particularly because it's a person who was so accomplished in such verifiable, I'll call it ways, who could still struggle with the emotions and the feelings internally that I'm just not good enough or I'm stupid. What a shame. And that that was a difficult conflict for her internally and didn't do well for her at work either.
Yes, I think that's a really very regrettable phenomenon that that conditioning stays in the body. You cannot get rid of it in the conventional methods. I've been through all of those methods in the early years when I was very involved in these techniques and trying to talk yourself out of this state and telling yourself that you are smart and you love yourself. And you can say that, but the emotional part of the brain and the part of the brain that controls behavior do not respond to words. And that's why when you talk to yourself, when people talk to themselves, let's say, you know, one of the exercises for self-acceptance is to look in the mirror and say, I love myself. You can say that, but the part of you that doesn't love you is not going to get it. So you need to do something else to make sure that it goes through your whole mind-body system.
Well, Paula, this has been fascinating to learn more about a something else, as you just said, an alternative for people who have tried other approaches. When people have tried something and it hasn't worked, they can be discouraged. So I'm so pleased that you've been able to give us a taste of the work you do, which could provide some relief for people to get past these difficult internal conflicts, which, of course, can lead to external ones as well. And as I said, it's just a taste, but it gives people a little bit of an idea of the work you do. Where could people learn more about what you do and get in touch with you?
Thank you, Jane. It's so nice of you to ask about that. I have a website called www.naturalintelligencesystems.com. It has a page about emotional intelligence where people can find out more about that. And there is also a place they can sign up for being on my mailing list. People can also reach me directly at my email, paula@brainupgrade.biz. and also on my phone number 646-554-3461.
I will, of course, put that information in the show notes for this episode and say thank you again, Paula, for giving us some encouraging news. We can all use that at any time, but it seems in our current state of the world, even more important.
Thank you, Jane, for being such a generous and wonderful host. And it's a privilege to be on your podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the Crafting Solutions to Conflict podcast, please share it, leave a rating or review, subscribe through one of the major apps. For anyone new to podcasts, here's something you may not know. Subscribing is free. You can also find the show at craftingsolutionstoconflict.com. Comments or ideas? Let me know. Until next time, I'm Jane Bettle.